Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Welcome to another episode of Letarte on Location. I'm your host, Steve Letarte. And folks, when you spent more than 20 years of your life traveling the road, first as a NASCAR crew chief and now as an analyst for NBC, you are bound to meet some interesting characters along the way. The goal of Letarte on Location is to bring you closer to some of these personalities I've met over the years. And pre-2020, it was going to be in some awesome locations. We're going to do it all over the country, but it's 2020, which means I'm still in my office in Cornelius, North Carolina. This one is over Zoom. And our guest today, I'm excited for. This guest has over 350 NASCAR starts. He's won at the Xfinity level. He's won at the truck level. He's an ARCA champ. He has a family of his own, but he is from a racing family as well. My guest today is Ty Dillon. Ty, man, thanks for the time. I appreciate you joining, bud.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for having me on. This is a great time and excited to be part of the podcast here.
I'm going to tell you, so this is an awful thing to say. These are the moments where I have to admit I'm not great at some parts of my job, right? Like, so I'm an analyst and I cover racing and you've been in the sport the whole time I've covered it. And I think I know you on a professional level, like, hey, how's your car and your skill sets and things like that. But personally, I don't think we've ever really spent any time to connect. So I'm looking forward to this kind of getting to know you a little more.
Yeah, totally. It's, you know, it's funny. You're around people a lot in our sport and you see each other constantly and you kind of, you can relate on a competitive basis. Like you say, we know a lot about each other in that sense, but a lot of times, especially nowadays, you don't get a great chance to get to know people on a personal level. So this is a great idea.
So we're going to cover the gamut. We're going to talk about family, both the family, your wife and your daughter, talk about coming from a racing family. But actually for you, I'm going to start in the absolute current here and now and this last weekend, the Roval. So yeah. We've all, I mean, rain. That's like the word. Everybody's talking about rain. And I've been threatened with rain tires my whole life. But we finally saw it, right? The field rolled off with rain tires. You guys gambled, flipped to dries, drove to the front. I thought that first stage was just captivating from a viewer. Take me behind the wheel. What was your overall take of starting the race in the rain?
Yeah, rain races have always been, you know, such an exciting part of motorsports in general. I think anybody that sees a rain race, no matter if you follow that series or not, you tune in and watch. You want to see kind of the chaos and how people handle it. I was fortunate enough to run two races in the rain in the Xfinity series. My first one was Road America, which was not a very fun experience. I had already knocked first and second gear out of the car, so I was rolling around there in third gear in the rain, and it was not very fun. And then my second go around, I was actually leading with a few laps to go in the rain, and that was when Justin Marks really took us to school. I think I ended up third or fourth in that day, but I really got some good experience in that session. So when it started raining and I looked at the forecast and it was looking like, you know, our race was most likely going to get to be rain in the rain, which I don't think any of us expected it to dry out and actually be racing on slicks at any point, which was a huge surprise. But I was really excited the days coming into it just because I had a little bit of prior knowledge, but I had also been doing a lot of training. I had bought a go-kart about 2 or 3 months ago, and I've been running a shifter kart over at GoPro Motorsports. So the road course race was something I've been trying to get better at. I've been using it as a training tool as well. And when it started raining, I had the idea. I'm like, well, it's raining at GoPro too. So I was going to go over there and make some laps in the rain and just kind of get my eyes and everything adjusted. Well, I kind of procrastinated and watched the Xfinity race and watched more. Then it got to about 5:30, 6 o'clock. And I called over to GoPro and said, hey, are you guys still open? They're like, yeah, we're still open. The rain's getting pretty heavy. So I went over there and got there about 6:30 and they said, no, we're shutting down. I'm like, man, if I could just get on. So I had to bribe them to let me run for 20 minutes out there on a go-kart at like 7 o'clock the night before the race. And my crew chief, Matt Borland, showed up and I just ran and made laps and tried to get a visual on what the different water, standing water, good traction. And those were on slicks too, on those go-karts. So I was kind of learning a little bit and just putting in some time. And I was, you know, just anything will help at that point. And then as soon as I got home, I started texting all the guys that I knew in the Xfinity race. I got a hold of, I got a hold of Blake Cook, who works with Harrison Burton, and he was really well, did really well in the rain. So I kind of picked his brains on what he said. Then I talked to AJ Allmendinger. I talked to Chase Briscoe and Daniel Hemric, just kind of picking all their brains on what they thought was, you know, key to know and to focus on, and what they thought you could do. So I felt well prepared to start in the rain, or in the wet conditions. So I was able to be aggressive and kind of drive up and put ourselves in a good position in, during that first little stint on rain tires. But I also knew I had taken off so well and so aggressive that I was burning up my tires. I could feel it with two laps to go that I was losing progress, and some of the other guys are getting a little bit better who were timid. But to me, I started seeing some dry streaks and a little bit of my previous rain knowledge. I knew you wanted to be the first one on the opposite set of tires. So I knew the forecast was looking like we weren't going to get any more rain for the day. And and Matt and I were kind of going back and forth, and I was like, you know what, we're in a position, let's just go for it. Let's put slicks on. And as soon as we put those on and we're going down pit road, and I kind of like wiggled the tires back and forth to see, you know, is this sliding or not? And it kind of, and it was like, it had grip. And I was like, I said it, and then I'm like, oh, we're good. Well, this is going to be good. And it was after that, it was just navigating a couple spots in the infield for the first couple laps. And then it was, everybody saw the rest. So it was a lot of fun.
Well, it was fun to watch. It was just, you know, so I'm a fan of racing, every style of racing. And I love when it's a game of inches. I truly do. I love when you have to chase a guy at Martinsville for 50 laps and you're gaining a foot and a foot. Well, you were the opposite. The first time you rolled out of the backstretch chicane on those dries, you looked like you were going 40 miles an hour faster than those guys on the treaded wet tires. And it was a blast to watch. And I love the gamble. It was a ton of fun. The Roval in itself, in my mind, you know, people can have all the opinions they want, but it's a challenge, and you guys are the best in the world. I like to see you all get challenged. You know, I like to see you guys be pushed to a level of comfort you're not used to, kind of like pro golf, right? I'm a big golfer, and I love those guys being uncomfortable, watching play pitch and putts. I mean, you know, they can tear any course apart. So so one thing I'm interested about this conversation with you is as I follow you on social media, I hear you in the media, you are not afraid to have an opinion, which I love, right? So let's jump right into that. We talk about the Roval. Let's talk about next year's schedule. Coda's on there. We got a dirt race. We got road courses. We'll start with the road courses. Your excitement level when you see six road courses out of 36, is your opinion, is that too many, not enough? What's your thoughts on the schedule?
I really enjoy road course racing. And kind of like you're saying, I like a change up. And I like doing something different. I pride myself on being somebody that adapts well. I kind of proved that this weekend. I think, you know, our sport needs it. Our sport needs some fresh blood week in and week out, or year after year. I think tracks need to be challenged to bring new fans to the track. There needs to be more incentive week in and week out. So the fact that we're adding, I believe, six new events in total to the schedule next year is great. It's fresh. And we see it all the time. We go to a place for the first time. We get a ton of fans that are buying in. They're going to the racetrack, or at least they're watching the race. And our sport needs to work on a year-to-year basis, I think, on racetrack contracts to create that excitement year in and year out. And that needs to be performance-based for them, just as it is for us as drivers and teams. So I'm excited for it. I know a lot of drivers can be so complacent and they don't want to change things and this is how it works. But I think make it as hard as you can on us. Change it up as much as you can. I love the showing up and racing on race day, no practice. You have to adapt and you have to be on your toes. And our sport has gone a little bit away to provide good racing. It's gone away from benefiting the cerebral driver who can really be, you know, those guys that are smart and put themselves in position at the end of the race. It's gone to a real aggressive mentality. Well, I think you change it to a different type of cerebral driver that can adapt quickly when you have these new shows, new races with no practice, and we're all having to adapt quickly. So I'm all for dirt racing, road racing. You know, if we can get street circuits, different things going, I think it's great for the fans. I think it's great for competition. And it's kind of an almighty equalizer. We've gone to the same two road courses for I don't know how many years over and over. And that was one thing I've told people is like, I pride myself on being a pretty good road course racer. Well, I went to the Cup Series, and Watkins Glen and Sonoma have been such a struggle for me. And the main reason is there's so much information that these Cup teams have just by racing there for so long. It's hard for a driver with, you know, when you get to go there one time a year to be able to gain that experience with a team that doesn't have as much resource and make that big difference up. But we go to the Daytona road course and we went to the Roval for the first time, and our team's running 14th to 18th the whole race and showing up at these races that the field is equalized. So I like those opportunities, and for myself, I always see them as major points to go out and make a difference and have been able to capitalize through those in my career.
You couldn't have said it better when it comes to the tracks. I'm not going to claim I understand the business model, so I don't want to speak like I do with the tracks. But my most exciting part of the 21 schedule is that it's new. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm with you, whether it's a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, whether some of it rotates. I don't know. I'm not in those meetings to understand the issues. I think we need some, I call them cornerstone events. The Daytona 500 is the Daytona 500, always will be, always should be, and that's where it's going to be. I think we have some other ones sprinkled through the season. We have the Southern 500. You know, there are four or five that we can build around. But I think as long as we continue to build around those, I think, you know, we're all a creature of habit. Like, you know, unfortunately, I know what you know because we live the same schedule every year, right? Yeah. You know you're going to vacation in December or January, or and you know you used to have an off week. And we get this repetition. And mm-hmm. I think the fans, that can be good for them. And it can be bad for them because we have a huge NASCAR fan in Kansas, but he works in an industry that doesn't allow him to get to our race because of that time of year. Move it around a little bit. I mean, let the weather obviously lead us a little bit, but other than that, let's bring the sport. I've never been to Austin. I hear it's great. I'm excited as can be to go down there, right? So I agree. The change of the schedule is so good. And you bring it up. I do think that there needs to be responsibility everywhere. I feel it. When they turn on the camera, it's my job to cover the race for the fans, right? You, when you strap in, it's your job. And I think the tracks, and some of them have really taken that to account, and you can see it when you go to some facilities. So I love it. I love everything what you're saying. It's funny you mentioned the road courses, because you're right. Watkins Glen's a road course, but, you know, picking a regular cup guy who's run there for the last 12 years, he's got more laps there than at any other road course there is. And, man, you know, they're hard to beat there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tough challenge. And, you know, we go to a place, if the Cup Series were to go to a mid-Ohio, I would be given the advantage. And it's only natural because I've raced 3 years there, and I have, you know, 200 or 300 laps or 400 laps, however many the race is there, over the Cup guys. So I'm going up against, you know, Kevin Harvicks and guys who have raced there 18 to 20 times
right.
Here. And that's a lot of laps, and it's hard. I'm going into year four. We didn't race at Watkins Glen this year or Sonoma. So I'm going into year four, which I've only had 3 years of experience at racing at those tracks. It's hard to make up those laps. And now we're kind of moving to an era with no practice. It only makes it harder. So, you know, you do have simulators and simulation and things like that, but there's nothing better for a driver than getting that natural feel of a racetrack, that feel of the asphalt. You can definitely get your visuals set, and it's a good closer of the gap, but that final couple tenths that we race for in NASCAR in the Cup Series, that's only natural. Those are instinctual things that you learn by experience year after year, and it makes it tough for those places. So I think we had to continue to get creative moving into different markets with different road courses and different tracks in general. And you know, we're all responsible, and the tracks certainly have the right to say that the drivers could you know, put on a better show or have better personalities. The broadcast could be better, but we all have to do it together. If we love this sport of NASCAR and we want it to work and be around for a long time, every single entity has to be held responsible for performance and bringing the most to the fans. And I think we all have a long way to go in doing that. There's so much growing with technology and everything that we can provide, but we have to do it together, and we can't, you know, put down another group. It's all a big entity. Right. We have to
It takes them all. And I'm going to walk into this next conversation, but I'm going to be sensitive because of the politely who you drive for. So what I'm getting ready to say is I feel like there's this uptick. There's this new ownership. There's this new excitement. There's a new schedule. There's a new car. But I want to be sensitive because it comes to the cost of people that are getting out of sport. Your owner is one of them. So why I'm not going to put you on the stand here today and say, hey, what are you doing next year? That's not what this podcast is for. I would love to get your opinion on that, right? I hate to see a team like Germain disappear, but at the same time, I'm excited to continue to see these new teams be announced. I mean, Jordan, right? You're wearing a Nike hat, right? I mean, Michael Jordan, the most recognizable athlete perhaps in the world, is now going to be a part of NASCAR. You mentioned Justin Marks. He's jumped back in the fray in ownership. You know, there's these teams joining the sport, and it seems like, am I naive to say, it seems like we have some momentum.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, you know, not to play both sides, but I'll probably end up playing both sides this point on this conversation. But ever since we had the COVID pause in our sport, that was a big time. I think we'll look back probably 5 to 10 years from now and even further in history and see, you know, that was one of those, you know, Daytona 500, the first race on TV moments in our generation, because you had everything that happened with the George Floyd incident, and you had NASCAR's response, and NASCAR's response from the drivers and themselves was a huge change in a timeline or a narrative over our sport, which I think was totally needed. And I think it opened eyes and it created change. And change means some people leaving and new blood coming in. And our sport has kind of needed that over time. I think there needs to be a new precedent set in a new time. And we can't get stuck back in the heyday of NASCAR, which is the late 90s, early 2000s, when our 100,000 seat stadiums were packed. We're just not in that world anymore. And that mindset of maybe the culture of our sport was different then than it is now. And there needs to be proof of that. And I think we're getting to a new place. So when you see teams like Michael Jordan and Denny Hamlin forming and Justin Marks now starting a team, that's great change. And I think that's great fresh blood to our sport, just as adding road course races and challenging tracks to 1-year contracts and performance clauses. I think those are great change. Obviously, it comes at the loss of certain things. And unfortunately, my team was one of those losses this year. And to me, it was kind of a shock how it all went down. We were, you know, we felt like we were in a good place going into 22. I had an option in my contract, and I was loyal to Germain Racing to hopefully, you know, fill in that contract. And we had all, you know, agreed, and we're feeling like we're going the next step. It was just depending on funding. And then just unfortunately, and Geico decided this, it was time for them to come out of funding a team, and kind of left us in a place where our team owner, Bob, had put in a lot of money, and it was just time for him to be done. And, you know, I respect his decisions, and you got to do what you have to do for yourself and your business. And it's hard because you work with a group of people for 3 years, 3.5 years, and you know, looking forward to going into year four, and you know, you got 47 employees without a job, and we all find out with 10 races to go in a race season. So it's certainly been a interesting challenge for me. I've matured and grown a ton ever since I've stepped into Germain Racing as a person and as a driver too. I was really immature and more of a kid. And my life has grown up and having children myself, and we're about to have our second baby any day, any week. It's been good for me. And even though it's been really hard, especially these last couple of weeks have been probably the most stressful in my career, just not having a job and trying to communicate to different owners and sponsors to try to make something happen. And doing it in this climate of the world and the sport is really, really tough. But you know, I feel and I have good faith that, you know, the right opportunity will come at the right time. And I certainly believe in myself as a driver that, you know, when I won races in the truck series and the Xfinity series, if you go back and watch those races, you can YouTube my wins. The guy finished in second in 90% of those races is Kyle Busch. And right. When I won my race in the Xfinity series at Indianapolis, I think Kyle was second, Harvick was fifth, Paul Menard was in the race, Kurt Busch was in the race. I've beaten these guys before, and I know in my heart, in the right situation, I can beat them again, and I'm only a better driver. I've only grown through maturity. I've gone through years with a team that is not as funded as you know, the top teams, and we have shown good performance and good things at times. And, you know, I don't want this journey to end. I feel like it's just getting going. I feel like I'm starting to get into my peak mentally and physically and with my experience in the sport. And, you know, hopefully the right opportunity comes and I can really start proving myself and what I know I can do as a driver.
We're talking to Ty Dillon, NASCAR driver. We have a lot of topics we're going to cover, but I want to gum off that answer. And so I don't want to make this sound silly, but I've never had that challenge of the smaller team. I was spoiled to work at Hendrick Motorsports my whole professional career before I switched to TV. And I tell everyone when they say, hey, what's the best thing about working at Hendrick Motorsports? I said, we had everything possible to win. And they said, well, what's the toughest part? And I said, we had everything possible to win. And they don't understand it. But so that's why I want to have this conversation with you, because for me personally, I became a crew chief at 25 for Jeff Gordon, right? Somehow he thought I was the guy that could do it. I'll be indebted to him forever. That I'm only talking to you today because Jeff Gordon gave me that chance. But I look back in 2007, we led the points with five races to go, and we lost to Jimmy Johnson, or he took it from us. It's probably fair. He won four the next five. But, you know, there are moments in my career when I had to look in the mirror and ask myself, could I do it? Like, am I the right guy? Can I do this? Can I give this superstar the car he needs? Can I call the race I need to call? And this sport is humbling, as I think probably any sport is. So that's my challenge, I guess my question to you. You don't have the same equipment. No one's ever going to claim that across the board. So as a race car driver, how do you measure it? How do you leave a race, measuring your performance? Not the car, but you as a driver. How do you say good day, bad day, unprepared, I was prepared? How do you evaluate that?
Yeah, I think that's been a lot of my maturing process over the years. I think when I came in and I first signed with Germain Racing, I was – a hot shoe in my own mind. I'm like, I'm going to turn this thing around. We're going to win a championship my rookie year. I know how to run every year I've ever raced anything. I've been in the top two or three in points, and that's what it's going to be like here. And it was a big, big learning curve. And we had some good showings in that rookie year. And I look back at it now that, I've worked and we've been technical alliances with RCR and some of the teams and technical partners have had rookies come in. And watching their first years, and I see myself, the first half of the year, you're spunky, you believe you got the world, in your hand. And the second half of the year, that humbling feeling of this is a 36 week race with the best of the best. I am beat down by the end of your rookie year. And then you're kind of picking yourself up during the off season, like, okay, this is the real deal. And I'm going to have to take myself serious. And it really does take two or three years to kind of mature through that. And, I was year two, year one and year two, I was really beating myself up. I'd come back to the motorhome and just fall into my wife's arms and cry and, feeling that same feeling. Like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know what's wrong with me. And really lack of perspective of, of bigger things and everything going on. And kind of the end of middle to, I guess, the beginning of year three and all the way into this year, I had to give it away. It wasn't about where I was finishing. And I used to be so focused on every time I got out of the race car, whether it was practice, qualifying, or the race, where am I at on that board compared to the people I think I'm supposed to be around or where I want to be. And I had to give that away and just go and say, okay, I'm going to give the best information I can as a driver to my crew chief. I'm going to be the best teammate I can to all the guys working on the car, encourage them that they can be the best they can. And I have to let the cards fall where they fall. If I lose my job, at least I'm going to lose it doing everything I can physically manage. And it just it's not meant to be if that's the way it's supposed to be. And if it's supposed to be, I'll keep a job, and it's not in my hands. And a lot of that is due to my faith in Christ and the way that I believe that things are, if I'm meant to be here, it's bigger than just where I finish on the racetrack. It's to impact people's lives. And that's really freed me from being kind of entrenched to my finishing position and putting Ty Dillon and his value is 25th this weekend.
Right.
That's what I had to grow out of. And that's helped me a lot in this sport and helped me be a way better driver. It helped me be a way better member of a team. And I've really learned to enjoy that part of it and jump into the relationship side. And then a part of that too was also and knowing like if my career were to end tomorrow or somebody, even this off season, if nobody gave me an opportunity and I had to do something different, the next thing was I wanted to make sure that I did everything as a driver and had no regrets. So year three, I hired Blake Cook to come on as my personal trainer, and him and I do a lot of, we talk about races and stuff, but I dropped like 20 pounds and now I've added 10 or so back in muscle. I've changed my whole physical shape and I'm in the best shape of my life. And I'm able to drive a car way harder. I thought I was driving as hard as I possibly could my first 2 years of my whole career, but now I can drive it 10 times harder and at a level that I didn't know I even had in me. I thought I was already reached that level. So doing things like that, training more, mentally getting myself better prepared, learning how to relate in relationships with my crew chief, just as I have to with my wife. It takes constant work and understanding people's personalities. Those are things that I've gained through a time where we might not have the best stuff, the best equipment, but that's how you drown out that narrative that is very real week in and week out. But those are things you can start focusing on. So that one time where maybe a sponsor says, hey, we're going to jump on board with your team. I wish it was what would have been Germain Racing that we could have got more financial help from, that it could have been that team. And we could have, you know, taken all the opportunities that we worked really hard on and jumped to that next level. So if you stay ready, you know, you don't have to get ready. So I've just kind of been working at that level. And you know, right now I look at the opportunities like last weekend, and when the field gets equalized by something like rain, or we go race at Talladega or Daytona, those are the places that, you know, I pride myself on rising to the top at. You know, Talladega, I now have the best average finish of any driver who's raced there more than five times. And I think it's 12th. And if Tony didn't get credit for a sixth place finish that I finished in his car when he had his broken back, it would be even better than that. And Daytona, we've been just as good there too. You know, we pride ourselves on taking advantage of the opportunities that mean that, you know, equalize the field the most for us. And, you know, one day I'll get the opportunity to really prove the rest of the work that I'm putting in.
Talking to Ty Dillon here. Ty, I want to talk. You mentioned some things I want to circle back to. Mentioned faith and family. We're going to have that conversation. But one thing you were mentioning right there about your trainer. So I'm a Patriots fan, huge Patriots fan, always have been. I believe you're a Panthers guy from everything I've seen, right? So your man Cam goes from the Panthers to the Patriots. And I bring this up not to have a football conversation, but I follow all the players on the team and I watch the videos that Cam put out of the work he put in. And, you know, when the Panthers say, hey, you're not coming back here, and nobody picked him up, it was very clear to me that he put the work in as an independent contractor. And that's the word I want to use. What I want the fans to understand is that while you drive for the 13, you're really your own man, your own independent contractor. Like, if you want to get in better shape or manage all these things, that's really on you.
Yep.
Tom Brady has found a way to do that. He has his own people, right? I know he plays for a team, but he has his own group. Cam went and did that. Talk to that in racing. I hear Blake's name a lot. Josh Wise's name a lot. This new, it's funny because Jeff Gordon kind of did it with the business side. You know, he had his own business people, but maybe not the athletic side. But this is not new, right? You guys, and I say you guys being professional athletic drivers, now have teams. Not your race team, but your own personal team of people to allow you to do your job better.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I personally, and it starts with the driver's motivation, I think, to get better. And you see the guys that work with Blake Koch or work with Josh Wise, these guys are the guys that you can see getting better in their career every year because they're motivated to be the best that they can be. And they attach themselves to guys who are going to push them to get better. I think back 2 years ago in the off season, when I hired Blake, I had also done a lot of things as far as figuring out what's going on with my body, with my brain and all kinds of different things and checking every single box I could to make sure I was as healthy as possible and I was getting the most out of my body. And, outside of a race car, this is all I own, to be able to do my job. So it's the most important thing to get myself in shape. I bought a hyperbaric chamber that I rest in and restore my body so that I can work out harder. I can do things better. I can get out of a race at 500 miles to Bristol and get in that thing the next morning and be able to go start a workout at 10:30 the next morning and go on a 3.5 mile run with all kinds of different things involved because I have put in that forethought and focusing on getting the most out of my body. I'm very blessed that my wife is an amazing cook. But she's not only an amazing chef, she really knows nutrition and we eat healthy and clean. And that's been something good to me. I used your guy, Tom Brady's, his book. I read his book on his TB12 training regimen And probably the thing I took the most from that was his hydration process. And hydration is, of all things, probably the most key for our sport. So for the past 2.5 years, I've used his hydration squeezes in water. And I drank water every single day with Tom TB12 water squeezes in that. So it's a process, and it's, you know, it goes back to like, how bad do you want it? And to me, I think my motivation is, no matter when my career ends, I never want to look back and regret that I didn't take every opportunity I had. And I think that's just kind of where it goes. And I'm sure there's more rocks to be overturned, as Jeff, when he was in his heyday, and Jimmy in his heyday, they were the best at taking advantage of everything that was there for them to be the best drivers. And I think it's a hungry world out there. Everybody's working really hard to be the best they can in and out of the racetrack, which makes a better product on the racetrack for everyone. So, I think that's the biggest thing. And I guess to keep it kind of football and racing, another aspect is, this kind of ties in with my faith. My wife is from Seattle, and I don't want to rob too much time, but if you get me talking, I'll talk about this stuff forever. But, we go to a church out in Seattle called Church Home, and Russell Wilson is part of the church, and he leads an athletes group. And we got invited to come to the athletes group, and we got to go spend time in downtown Seattle passing out clothes. And Russell Wilson had just played the Panthers Sunday night in Carolina. He flew home, and we heard the whole story. And he flew home, and they said that he flies home, and on his flight home, he studies film for the next week. And during his film study, he creates notes and runs the meeting, or helps run the meeting with the coaches to help the other team, the rest of his team, prepare for the next team. He gets home Sunday night, does his rehab. Monday, he goes and does more rehab, and he's at the facility. And then Monday night, he's out leading this young athletes group for the future, which is a bunch of college kids. And I was there, and a couple other Seahawks players are there, and they're out passing out clothes. And that was just like, you know, Russell Wilson is, he doesn't have to do that kind of stuff. He doesn't have to prepare that hard. You wouldn't think, but that's the way he works. And it's like, man, I wasn't doing anything like that. And the reason that guy is that good is because he cares that much. He puts that much effort in it, and he is a true leader. And I tell people now, I'm like, if Russell Wilson's leading a team, that team's going to be great. And you can see now they're a good team. But that was something that was really eye opening to me, and of leadership and personal, just want to be a better person on and off the field, or on and off the track. And that was a big eye opening experience for me.
You know, it's funny, the great ones that everybody thinks it's easy for normally work way harder than everybody know. They don't tell anybody, because they don't. That why would I give away the secret sauce, right? If this is how someone has climbed the mountain, then good for them. Well, hey, listen, before we get off football, man, Cam's here. If you want to switch teams, I'm just letting you know there's a lot of room, Patriots Nation, because I lost my wife and son. Luckily, we could still live under the same household, but they've moved on to Tampa. They went with the quarterback to Tampa. They got new jerseys, new world. So it's a little bit of a rough go in the Letard house. So that, listen, that's, I'm gonna transition to that. So family, I'd be the first to say I was 25 when I became a crew chief. I had a 2-year-old son and a newborn daughter. And while I'm proud of what I have and the dad I've become, I was not an all-star dad for the first 4 or 5 years. I was all encompassing to try to build my career, understand my career. I've changed 10 diapers in my whole life. My wife would say that's a round up. It's probably 5. I have a superstar wife. I know you and your wife very close. You have a family now. I want to have this conversation because I think this relates from race car drivers to bankers to the guy mowing the lawn to the guy at the grocery store. Everyone in the world has to manage personal and professional, right? Yep. So as a race car driver, how do you do it? How do you build a family? How do you be a great dad, a great husband, a great race car driver? You know, when is it your turn to be great? When do you lean on them for their help? Like, what is the balance for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, that's been probably the biggest thing for me. And you said it, it's very true for me too, is my wife is a superstar wife. And, you know, we were together when I was 19, which was my first or second year in the truck series, is when we first started dating. And we've been together ever since. We got married, I believe we were 22 when we got married. And then we had Oakley when we were 25. So Until honestly, until 25 or 26 years old, I was not the superstar husband, but she was, and she held this thing together for us. I was really young and immature, and you know, just being the young race car driver superstar I thought I was in my own brain, and you know, relying on people's approval and the sport's approval, and not realizing what I had at home. And you know, she has been so special to my life, more importantly than my career. And then we had Oakley when we were 25, and that really just brought things into perspective for me. And I would give all this away in a heartbeat just to spend more time with them and with my family. I grew up in a racing family that traveled a lot and did a lot of things. And, you know, as people, we all grow, you know, no one of us want to be perfect. I want to be the best me at 99. And I think that's something to keep in perspective is, at 26, 25, I was so messed up and lost in what I thought was important and what really is important. And even at 28, I'm sure I'll look back at when I'm 30 and say, man, I didn't have it figured out at 28 either. I don't think you'll ever have it figured out, but you have to challenge yourself to grow. And the most important thing to me, like I said, is my faith and my wife. And that's something that has taken me years to figure out. And I don't think anybody ever figures it out. Marriage is a challenge, but it's also the most beautiful thing that you get to do in life. And there's nothing more challenging and more rewarding. And same thing with having kids. But it is the most important thing we get to be a part of for the rest of our life. And I try to always keep that in perspective. And sometimes I'll lose perspective on it, especially when you're in a job crisis. We all do. None of us are perfect. None of us do it perfect. But it is a very precious thing that I'm so grateful for and so thankful for my wife and my kids. And it'd be hard to ever pry me from them in any kind of action. There's no money or anything that could take me away from them.
I tell people all the time, you know, a statement I make is, you know, when people say marriage is hard, some people get taken back. And I said, you know, the greatest things in life are hard. You should work at them. It doesn't mean it's not enjoyable. It doesn't mean it's the most important thing I have. But if it's not hard, then perhaps you need to ask yourself, are you being your best you? Are they being their best they? Are you guys being the best, you know, together? And there are moments that should be hard. I mean, life, it doesn't come in the manual. I mean, this stuff can be difficult. So I want to unpeel the onion a little bit on the family because, you know, you grew up in a racing family. Listen, your grandfather owns a team that your brother drives for. You started racing there. So no family relationships are perfect. I don't ever want to paint with a broad brush to say it's awful or great. I don't know where it stands. But talk about the benefits and the real challenges of having, you know, I'm assuming, you know, one of your heroes, your mentor, your grandfather, your team. I mean, he wears so many hats. Like, how does that all interplay competing in that same sport? You mentioned you drive for a different team, but you have a technical alliance at RCR. I mean, there's a lot of layers in this notebook.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just like a marriage, it's a relationship and families have, you know, each person in each family has dynamics and relationships across the board. And, you know, my brother and I have raced together our whole careers. We raced together as essentially as teammates, even though I was 2 years younger, I was always kind of, we'd race against each other for a year. Then he'd go ahead for a couple years and we'd race against each other. And it was kind of that progression through our whole year. Always challenging each other and pushing each other. My grandfather was there to always, you know, try to help provide the best stuff and equipment to get us to where we are now. And you get to, you know, I got to the Xfinity Series and was having success. And my second year, I had a couple teams reach out to want me to go cup racing for them. And my grandfather wanted me to hold out for possible opportunities at RCR. And those opportunities never really came about. You know, I don't know in mass detail why or why not. It didn't quite work out. But there was certainly opportunities knocking at the door. And mainly the one that I ended up with was Germain Racing. They wanted to commit to me for several years like we have done. And that was so hard for me to pass up. And through that, you know, I think I've grown as a man, and that happened around when I was 21 or 22 years old. And you start realizing that you want to, you know, my brother and I were so grouped together, and it's hard not to as almost one person, you know, the Dillon brothers, and they come from a family. So we kind of know who they are as a group. But, you know, I think Austin and I both deserve respect of who we are as individuals, and we're quite different, and people that get to know us understand that we're quite different people, and we both kind of understand that about each other. We've grown up around each other our whole lives, and I live over in Mooresville. My whole family still lives kind of on in Lexington and actually even further out than that. And a lot of that has to do with just, you know, where my race team was when we moved out here and everything. But we all have our individual lives. My brother has his whole family. He has a family now himself with his little boy Ace. And I think we both want each other to get the respect that we deserved for people to understand who we are as individuals. On the racing side, you know, as a kid, it was always a goal to race for my grandfather. But as that reality kind of started dwindling, I also started finding satisfaction in finding success in my own, you know, in my own way. And, you know, it meant a lot to me that Bob Germain and Geico wanted to take a chance on me breaking out of my family in a way. We were still Technical Alliance, breaking out in a way. And even in this next chapter, whatever it may bring, you know, it is intriguing for me to, you know, I don't think there's an opportunity at RCR even next year for me to go. They have both their drivers under contract. So 21's not looking like an opportunity to race there again. So to have another opportunity for to race for another team and prove to everyone, you know, I'm a driver that can drive anything, you know, and for any team. I don't want them to categorize me as he can't drive for us because of, you know, because of his family. You know, I'm a race car driver. And when it comes down to it, I just want to win races. And I believe in myself, and I hope people will respect me for that. That's been a really tough narrative to kind of break out of, is a little just gaining some individualism and people respecting me for who I am. But all with all due respect said, you know, my career has gotten here because of the effort and the hard work that my grandfather put forward and put me in good equipment so I could go out and win races and prove myself at each level. So I'll always be thankful and grateful for that. And I plan on having a long career, so you never know where it goes. But, you know, I think we're all family. We have different dynamics. And even my relationship to my grandfather is different than my relationship to my dad, which is different than my relationship to my mom and my brother. And everyone deserves to be able to progress their relationships at different times. Just because I, you know, I'm getting along with my brother at the time doesn't mean that everyone has to get along at the same time. We all have to respect each other for our own relationships. And that's not, you know, saying anything about our family dynamic. I'm just saying that's how we approach relationships in general and you know, how it all works out. So it seems complicated from the outside because it is relationships. They're complicated.
They are complicated. And, you know, what makes them more complicated is when they're public and easily judged. And that's what I think, you know, by no means am I in the public eye like you as a race car driver, my good friend Dale Jr., you know, but the little bit I'm in the public eye, it's easy for people to have an opinion of how you and I should be. Oh, well, Ty and Steve, they should be this or they should be that. Well, the only one who gets to decide that are you and I.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how relationships work. And that's really why I asked the question, because I've never seen anything but goodwill between the whole group, but it is... Man, it's complicated. If I had to get on the whiteboard, I'm like, well, he started driving here and he went here, but he owns this. And he, you know, and it, there is this public domain that makes it more complicated. But I want in my heart to believe I still see you guys around the Christmas tree out west somewhere opening presents on Christmas morning, right? As grandsons and fathers and grandfathers, right? So it's, you know, it's kind of that's how I all want it to be in my mind. And I'm sure it is at times, but unfortunately or fortunately, when you do things in the public eye, it gets a little more complicated.
Yeah, certainly. I think people lose perspective of maybe their family relationships too. When they're trying to put together what this perfect, everybody thinks because you're on TV or you're a NASCAR driver that life is perfect. And certainly it's not. Life is just as challenging. Yes. Have I been blessed to be able to do a job that financially pays well and I get to do a fun job for a living, yes, but doesn't mean that other aspects of life aren't hard at times and that we struggle in different ways. We all do in life. We're not going to escape it. And anybody who tells you they're not struggling, well, that's their struggle. They just don't know yet. So it's life. And, you know, we all have different dynamics, like we said, and it's really hard to when you're in the public eye, because especially right now with trying to find a job, you have a lot of people who are interested in your job and they know about your job and they're always asking, so what are you going to do? You know, who are you talking to? What's the ins and outs? Like, you know, if you're just a, you know, if you're not in the in the racing world or the TV world, people don't know and they don't really care. They just want to know, how's your life going? You know, what's going on with your kids? What's going on with your wife? But the questions we get every single day is, what are you going to do for a job? And it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do for a job. And asking is just stressing me out more. So
that's right.
And we're trying to figure it out, but it's just not an easy thing, but you know, much is given, much is asked, and I'm very appreciative of everything that I've been given, and I can certainly handle the questions and everything, but yeah, it's not easy. And I guess to everyone listening, don't let anyone fool you that life is easy for anyone. It's I don't want to say that in a negative tone. Life is beautiful, but people experience stress. Everyone does. Everyone goes through hard times. My wife and I went through a miscarriage this off season, in the middle of the off season. That was one of the hardest things I've ever been through. And through that dark time, we're now having a child afterwards, and it's been such a blessing and experience. And we're a few weeks out, and something that back in the off season, we would have been so, you know, just ecstatic. And we're so excited to meet our baby boy, but we're 2 or 3 weeks out from meeting him, and we're stressing out about a job, you know, like mm-hmm. in this off season, we didn't care what we did. We just wanted to have a child. So life ebbs and flows, and seasons come and go. And, you know, trying to keep that middle ground, you have to be grounded in something. And that's where our faith as a family, comes into big play through all these crazy seasons of life, and everyone's going through it.
Well, Ty, man, listen, I appreciate your time. I think I'm gonna be a better guy just from this conversation. It's interesting where we all kind of find, you know, whatever it may be, right? We all are influenced by good and bad social media, what we read, what we watch, what we see, who we talk to, who we choose to be around. We all make those decisions. Listen, I wish you the best, first of all, with your family and the upcoming birth of your boy. Congratulations. My son's 16. I have a 16-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl, and it's the craziest thing in the world. So buckle up, because it'll happen quick. Because I was you, because I got married at 22. I had kids at 25. Like, we're on this. If you want to know what chaos looks like at 41, just come on over to my house. So I'll show you what it looks like, right? Because now I got one going to school in South Charlotte, and he drives around, and everybody's going everywhere. But listen, like I said at the start of this conversation, I felt I knew you as the race car driver because it's my job to cover you as a race car driver. I selfishly wanted to get to know you more as the person. And it's been everything I hoped it would be, and more value. So, man, I appreciate your time today. I hope everybody listening enjoyed it. It's been a great conversation.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks for your time, and enjoyed talking.
It's good stuff. As always, this has been another episode of LaTarte, a location with my buddy Ty Dillon. Review, rate, and subscribe. You can get this podcast anywhere you get your podcasts.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.